You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Monday. I am your fill-in host, Christina Long. Matt Jones is a little under the weather today, so here on the desk to fill in for him, and I think I'll be back later this week, too, as we get going with baseball and all things, you know, that's really Matt's world. So we'll be having some filling in, some guest hosting over the next few weeks, too, as he, you know, he'll go to Arlington and bring all that baseball coverage on wholehogsports.com. But today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about basketball, about their loss to Alabama the other day. I have Anthony Christensen in studio with me today. And then later, Ethan Westerman will join us to talk about the opening weekend of Arkansas softball and then talk a little bit of kind of miscellaneous news with baseball coming up, Super Bowl last night, gymnastics got a big win on Friday. So do a little bit of news at the end of the show. But we're going to start with basketball because, you know, Anthony, for what it was, you know, there were so many things that happened in that game as far as the way that it felt. It felt like it changed so many times over the course of the game where we talked before the show off air about how it looked like they were kind of going back to some of their old ways and not looking so good. And then they actually were able to fight back at the end, but still kind of tripped over themselves a little bit at the end there too. So I guess, did you see any progress here? Did this feel like where they had been before those two wins? Or where do you feel like you're at with this team and kind of if they've progressed?
Probably somewhere in the middle, right? Like, I mean, the reason that the game was close at halftime and then ended up being close was in my mind that they forced turnovers. 9 first half turnovers for Alabama, and then I believe it finished, let me look at the stats, with 14, excuse me. Yeah. So when Alabama went on the run to make it an 18-point game, there was one turnover in that stretch. And then when Arkansas went on its run to make it close there at the end, there was four more. So that was the big difference, I think, because Alabama ended up shooting 54% from the field, only 26% from three, which, I mean, Alabama doesn't live or die by the three. That's kind of a misconception about Alabama, but they do take a lot of threes. But Arkansas, you know, forced turnovers and, you know, didn't let Alabama have those opportunities to kind of expand its lead in the first half. And that's why Arkansas, I think, had 10 more field goal attempts in the first half than Alabama did. So to go in at halftime kind of only down by 6 points was, I don't want to say a mirage, but you could kind of see if Alabama didn't turn the ball over, the lead was going to expand just because of how well Alabama was shooting the ball inside, kind of getting it to the rim, which is where Alabama's been at its best this season. So, you know, and then you get to, you know, I think they finished the game on a 26-12 run to cut the lead down. Avisic had a three that made it a three-point game at one point. And at that point, that's when Arkansas's on-ball defense was kind of at its best, and they forced the turnovers, and Alabama just wasn't keeping up at that point. But I guess did enough to win in the end. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. I went to the game just and sat in the stands. I wasn't covering it. And I, like, you know, my duties post-game are always recording the post-game Zoom and posting it on our YouTube channel. And I had my computer in the car, and I was like, all right, I'll leave a few minutes early I want to be in the car at the end of the game, have my computer open. So I was going to leave. I always go a little earlier than I need to. So I was going to leave with about 4 minutes left, and then I was like, all right, close game. This is probably going to be a long 4 minutes. So I was like, I'll give it till about two. Well, then Arkansas goes on this run. Alabama doesn't call a timeout. I kept waiting for them to call a timeout or foul or do something. And then 2 minutes went by really fast. And then I left as it was getting good because I was like, I got to get to the car. And I was the only living soul walking down the street to my car. No one else was leaving that building. There had been
an
exodus.
Had you left at the under eight timeout, yes. you would have been with
exactly.
A lot of friends.
There was an exodus about 8-10 minutes left. Yeah, and then everybody kind of, I don't know if anybody came back, turned around again, sat down, but it, you know, it didn't, the crowd didn't thin out crazy. It was mm-hmm. a great crowd, which I think is important to note because of so much of the, you know, early season and even at the beginning of conference play, the narrative about, you know, not being able to fill up Bud Walton, but they really did, you know, if you couldn't fill it up for this game, there would have been a problem, but they did. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good crowd. And yeah, it was fun. It was so loud at the end.
That was the loudest I've ever heard Bud Walton. Now, granted, I wasn't here for Duke or anything. I moved here last January, just past 1 year.
Yeah,
here.
There you go.
So yay me, I guess. But yeah, it was the loudest I'd heard Bud Walton get. you know, in my 1 year of being here, plus the one game I had in college. But it was a fun environment for sure. I mean, it looked like two teams that were good, even though Arkansas has, you know, had its struggles this mm-hmm. year, and you know, it's kind of on that tournament bubble. But it was a fun environment for sure. And Alabama, and John Calipari said it after the game, was the deserving winner, and I can't find anybody who I think would disagree with that. I mean, Arkansas had one lead and it was 2-0, so yeah. I don't think you're gonna have anybody disagreeing that Alabama was the deserving winner of that game. But it was fun. It was the loudest I've heard Bud Walton get in my 1 year and change of coming to games there. And no, it was a great environment for sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about Zvonimir Ivicic because he's been the story of a couple of games now, it's felt like, or a through line for the last few games. Just what do you feel like has gone better for him recently, or where have you seen him kind of progress?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is he's more physical inside than he has been. Like he's kind of embracing the physicality that comes with the SEC, which maybe at the start of the conference season he wasn't doing quite as much. And his shots are starting to fall a lot more than they were before. I mean, he went 5 of 9 for 3 in this game and had 15 points at halftime. I think he looks confident. I think he's, you know, getting the ball a lot more. I think the team trusts him more. I mean, he's kind of established himself as the go-to guy for that 5 spot over Jonas Adu and Trevin Brazil, which I don't know that I would have expected that coming into the season. But, you know, he's played really well, I think, really since the second half of that Mizzou game. I thought he was the only bright spot you could take from that game in Columbia. And, you know, for the most part, he's played well. I think there's, you know, maybe a game here or there that he wasn't good or as good. I mean, granted, it's a 5-game stretch, so it's not the greatest or the largest sample size. But, I mean, his shot is starting to fall. I think he's starting to get a more consistent role. Just kind of, you know, his roles just kind of shifted and fluctuated so much from the start of the season. And some of that, you know, comes from he had a couple of different ankle injuries and whatnot, and so that was part of it. And I think he's starting to be more confident. You know, he's always played pretty well defensively. I mean, 3 blocks, 3 steals against Alabama. So I mean, he's kind of, I don't want to say becoming a defensive anchor, but he's certainly being productive on that side of the floor.
More consistently than others,
yes,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then his shot is just falling, and I think that's what you want. He gives them something different than Jonas Adu does, or even Trevin Brazil, though they're more similar than, say, Ivicic and Adu. But mm-hmm. I think he's giving them the most productive and consistent minutes at that spot. So I would expect them to continue to kind of, play through him, if that makes sense.
Right.
Kind of in that point forward mold that you kind of see more and more with big guys. Like he's not Jahni Broome.
Yeah.
But like he plays and it's not dissimilar. I mean, Jahni Broome kind of plays a little bit more inside, but mm-hmm. I guess the Robbie Avila at St. Louis, or, you know, there's plenty of examples of, you know, big guys who can step out and hit threes. And, you know, he's kind of starting to, I'm not starting, because I mean that's kind of always been his big thing. It's like he's 7'2" and he can hit threes. Wow!
But Calipari said, you know, as the season, you know, once they kind of saw what they had, he had wanted to kind of keep him from shooting threes a little bit more, you know.
Yes.
And he was like, actually, he's kind of the only guy we have that can do it. So
yeah, but actually, he's actually pretty good at this.
Yeah.
But
so
no,
open
so
that up.
I think
for him
that
more.
Maybe is kind of part of like the fluctuating roles, like
right.
And he wasn't starting for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now he is starting. So I think he's starting to, and obviously the injuries as well. Don't want to forget to throw that in there. But he's starting to get that more of a consistent run and more consistent run doing the things he's good at,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, the biggest thing for him.
Right. After, you know, the Kentucky win, we started talking about the tournament picture and how all of a sudden there is a path to the tournament that didn't feel like it was there before. And, you know, then they go get a road win at Texas that we didn't necessarily think they were going to lose, but we weren't sure. You know, we didn't chalk that up really either way. When we talked about, you know, okay, looking at their home and road schedule, how are they going to get to that kind of 7 SEC win threshold that's kind of the bare minimum, right? So we talked about, okay, Alabama probably going to count that a loss because it was pretty much their toughest home game remaining. I mean, they go to Auburn. That's probably their toughest game left. But, you know, we kind of thought, okay, when we sort of drew it up, we said, okay, consider, you know, say they lose to Alabama. So this was kind of what we thought would happen. And, you know, they have a road game at South Carolina that's very winnable. They have that road win over Texas that helps a lot. They need, what, four more to get to that bare minimum mark? So, I mean, I feel like it looks very possible. I mean, what do you feel like are the biggest – are there any games that you think are traps or things that people shouldn't overlook? Because, like I said, you know, Auburn's the big one that's really hard. South Carolina looks pretty winnable. They're – the worst team in the league. So are there any games you think that people should watch out for, or things that might look winnable but they need to worry about, or things that look too hard that actually might be winnable for them?
I think, I mean, with how deep and how talented the SEC is just from top to bottom, I mean, you mentioned South Carolina. South Carolina's got arguably a lottery pick on that team in Colin Murray Boyles. So, I mean, there's talent, talent everywhere in the SEC. South Carolina at home has played Auburn to the buzzer, has played Florida to the buzzer. So, you know, that's not necessarily, you know, the given that maybe it looks like on paper. But, I mean, had they won that game against Alabama, that gives them a little bit of a more room for error to maybe drop a game against, you know, South Carolina or somebody else. But, I mean, yeah, there is a path forward. You can see, you know, John Calipari has for a long time said a team that goes 7-11 and has a win over Michigan should be in. And I wonder who he's talking about. you know, Oklahoma might be in that same vein here in a little bit, because they've also struggled in SEC play, and beat Oklahoma or Michigan in non-conference play. So maybe he was talking about Oklahoma. But no, it there's a path forward. There's a path to that 7-win threshold that I think gets you, if nothing else, on the bubble. But they don't have a lot of room for error. Like, if you lose to LSU on Wednesday, at home, no less, that might be a bubble popper. Yeah. Unless you go to Auburn and win, or go to Texas A&M and win. That's even if you get that A&M game, if you lose to LSU, I mean, that's bad.
Yeah.
Having already lost to LSU.
And it was close, but yeah, it was not great.
I mean, that LSU team is not a tournament team.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be abundantly clear about that. Yeah. I don't care how good the SEC is.
What's
it's
their
just
SEC
not,
record? Do you know if
I think it's 1-9.
That's crazy.
And the one is obviously the Arkansas game. So, and they got 30 balled at home against Texas. So, I mean, if you lose, if you get swept by LSU, that's trouble.
Yeah.
that makes it look pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Not to say, I mean, there's a light that you can path. You're on a dark path.
Yeah.
But you can see a little light. Yeah. You just got to follow it and hope it's not an oncoming train. But but I mean, there's opportunities and there's also landmines. So
right.
There's plenty of, you know, you can go to Texas A&M and get a win. You can go, you know, wherever and get a win, but you can't afford to lose to LSU. You can't afford to lose to South Carolina. I mean, you'll lose either of those games unless you get a win at Auburn or something like that, something unexpected. You're looking at a pretty tough ask, and they're very, the bubble this year is incredibly weak.
Really?
I mean, I look at it, I see UCF on the bubble. I'm like, oh, dear Lord, that's gross. Like BYU on the bubble, that BYU, Igor Damon, lottery pick.
You just
awesome
said words
guy.
That meant nothing to me.
That guy rocks. BYU should not be a bubble team.
Really?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ohio State with 10 losses right now looks to be a near lock. Come on.
What is behind that? I mean, is it just what is causing kind of that weaker set of bubble teams, you think?
I think a lot of teams kind of up at the top are like near locks, and a lot of teams just aren't losing games. Mm-hmm. And like Auburn, Florida, In the ACC, Duke. I mean, the ACC sucking.
They're very bad.
I think is kind of a big part of it. But I mean, a lot of these teams that are on the bubble have good wins. So like UCF, is as much as I don't think UCF should be in the tournament, has a win over Texas A&M. SMU, I can't remember who they've beaten. They don't have a great quad one record, but they've beaten up on quad two, quad three, quad four. So, and don't really have any bad losses per se, so they're kind of on that bubble. North Carolina has some decent wins, even though North Carolina also has, I think, 10 losses.
Like, stop.
And then, oh, you're going to get me going on a soap here. Like
I was
going
to say, like, thing I considered doing in this segment was setting a timer on my phone to give you 1 minute to talk other college. Here, I'm going to do it. I'm going to set a I'm going to give you a college basketball minute. I'm going to set you.
Look.
I'm going. All right. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
The fact that UC Irvine and UC San Diego are, they both have 20 wins and neither of them are in the bubble picture is insane. I mean, what more can you ask these guys to do? What more can you ask them to do? Those teams are phenomenal. Russ Turner at UC Irvine has been there for a long time. I think losing to UC San Diego the other night was the first time they've lost by over 10 points in like over a year, which is insane. It's ridiculous. Eric Olin, first year UC San Diego is eligible to go to the tournament. Phenomenal. If Drake doesn't win the Missouri Valley, probably not.
Oh,
getting
I know you're
in.
A big Drake head.
22-2. 22-2, the most wins in the country, mind you. And they look like they're not going to get in if they don't win the Missouri Valley Tournament. Start respecting these mid-majors, man. And a lot of these teams, the Power Conference teams, they will refuse to schedule them. So it's like, what can they do? What can they do? And with how weak the bubble is, all three of those teams should be in, regardless of what they do in their conference
that's
tournament.
That's your minute. Perfect.
Wonderful
1 minute college basketball soapbox from Anthony.
I mean, don't get me started on High Point.
Oh, I won't. Well, thanks for joining us in the studio, Anthony. And when we come back, we'll talk to Ethan Westerman about softball and a little bit more miscellaneous Arkansas news.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit of opening softball weekend with Ethan Westerman here in the studio. But first, I'm going to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. And if you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or skilled craftsmanship, you can choose Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, it was a really good opening weekend for Arkansas softball. I kind of want to go through, not necessarily game by game, but I want to start with that first game against Texas State. They win 3-1, and you and I talked a little bit over the weekend about just Texas State being, you know, I didn't know this, but Texas State being, that's a good win for them. Mm-hmm. That'll help their RPI. So I guess, what did you see in that first game against, you know, the most quality opponent that they faced over the weekend?
Yeah, well, I mean, they scored all three of their runs with solo home runs. So you wish that you had had somebody on base for one of the three, but they got the job done. Like, regardless, that's a good Texas State team. Like you said, they're picked to win the Sun Belt. They have the preseason pitcher of the year in their conference. They are they have a coach who's been there super long time, 25th year. Whenever you have a coach that's been somewhere for 25 years, it shows that there's a winning tradition there. You don't hang around that long if there's not. They were to the tournament last year, so that's a good win. They had to really fight to win at the end. They were up 3-0, and then the last inning it got a little bit dicey. They got out of a bases-loaded jam to win it, actually. So Cam Harrison, a freshman on the team, she got a save that night, and then she turned around and got a save the next day. So some good stuff from freshman pitching. Overall, just it was a good way to start off the weekend because you knew it was probably going to be your hardest game, but just the way that sports go, it's funny. It ended up not being their hardest game, but it was probably the win that you'll look back at the end of the regular season, and it's going to be a top, probably, I would guess, top 30-ish RPI victory for them.
And then they go 23-0 in what, 5? 6?
Yes, it was the longest game I've usually I think I've told you this before. With our job, I love a 5-inning game.
Yes.
Because I am done with that very fast, like, because it's usually like 8-0 or something. A 23-0 game lasts forever because they could just not get Arkansas out. It was like every inning Arkansas was at the plate, I'm like, this is about to be another however long. And it was, I rarely feel bad for college sports teams. Like, I was feeling bad for Lipscomb. I was like, I just want y'all to get out of this. Like, this is hard to watch. But the crazy thing is Lipscomb, if I'm not remembering incorrectly, they beat Bradley in the game right before they played Arkansas, who Bradley gave Arkansas problems. And I get it. All softball, baseball, whatever, it has a lot to do with pitching and, like, who you were up against, the matchups. But still, I'm like, how does this happen? How did y'all hang with somebody else? Because there was no hanging with Arkansas. It was a ugly one.
Yeah. And then they go 3-1 over Bradley, 9-1 over Bradley, and 2-1 over San Diego. Just what are your biggest takeaways from the weekend on the whole? Because, you know, first weekend, what did you feel like you learned about the team?
Yeah, well, the last game is kind of the one that I'm taking with me. The last and the first are the ones that I'm taking with me. Bradley, they beat 3-1, and it was not a pretty win at all. Like, Courtney was even saying, like, this is, we know we're better than that. But they won 3-1. Then they win 9-1, and it was kind of felt closer than that score indicated. Courtney Day, a Texas transfer, she hit 2 home runs in the 9-1 win, which is kind of a new thing that we're watching to see if they have another power hitter to go along with Bree Ellis. And then San Diego, the last game, is where it got really interesting because they were down to their final strike. They were down 0-1. They could not hit this pitcher for San Diego. She went into the last inning with one hit given up. And then Arkansas is at the bottom of its lineup. So you're like, okay, nobody's hitting on her, and now you're going to the 7-8-9 or whatever. I think it was actually 8-9-1 was how it lined up, but not ideal. Not ideal. But that's what it taught me about this team, is that they actually have a lot of people who are capable, because you got down to the bottom of the lineup and they produce. Actually, Reagan Kramer, a senior, pinch hit to lead it off, and she singles, and you're like, okay, they got their second hit on her. Then Spencer Prigge, she's, I believe, a senior. She's junior.
She's been around for a bit.
She's been around. Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's a senior. She draws a walk. So now got first and second, no outs. You're like, okay, something's up. But then Reagan Johnson, I believe, fly out. Forgot how they got the second out.
We're testing your memory here.
But then, so they get to 2 outs, I know. I think there was a sacrifice. There was a bunt in there that got them to the second out. That's how they got it. It was a bunt. But anyway, long story short, they end up getting runners in scoring position. Kaylee Wyckoff, their Texas Tech transfer, is at the plate. It's like a full count forever because she keeps on fouling off pitches. And you're like, okay, this is going to either end up, you know, it was either going to end up with Arkansas tying the game, or is she going to swing out or something, or strike out. And she comes through. She gets them tied. And with the bases loaded, they have actually back up.
This is wild.
My play-by-play.
You're live. You're audibly writing a game story.
I really am. So she ties the game, and then it's 1-1. San Diego has a chance to get out of the inning, but then they have an error that allows Ella McDowell to load the bases, and Bree Ellis is up with the bases loaded, and they have been pitching around her, kind of, and you're like, that's when I was like, okay, let's start writing the game story. I literally started writing Bree Ellis walked them off, like, before her bat even really started, and lo and behold, she hit the longest single I've ever seen in my entire life. It literally, everybody thought it was a home run.
That's so,
like,
funny.
That's how far away it, like, bounced off the top of the wall, I think, and hit the ground. But, like, she's rounding the bases like it's a home run. The scoreboard, the stat broadcast has it as 5-1.
Oh my gosh.
And then it changes to 2-1. You're like, what happened? They're like, oh, actually that fell to the ground. So
That's so funny.
It was a dramatic final inning. I gave you the play-by-play because nobody could watch this.
I was going to say, this was helpful for me because I don't really know what happened in the game. We couldn't watch.
I was watching, a parent was videoing this live. And so I was like, okay, I can watch this a little bit. But yeah, it was one of the crazier endings I've seen in a while, because it looked like they were dead. It looked like there was no hope for them
because
they could not hit off the screen, and then all of a sudden they did. So that's the game that taught me a lot, that they have a little bit of fight to them for sure. And to go 5-0 in a weekend, that is, you look across the nation with a lot of ranked teams, and it's a lot easier said than done. So they got it done, and then they have a tournament this weekend coming up at Louisiana Tech that just got done beating No. 6 Oklahoma State. So they get another challenge right off the bat.
Yeah, they've got that tournament, Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss, and Louisiana Monroe next, right? And they open, you know, we've talked a little bit about this before, about, you know, they they'll usually host more here in the early season, and they have one, they're hosting one invitational, right? But they're going on the road for a lot of these early season kind of multi-team tournaments or events or whatever. And so that's a little bit different thing for their schedule. But I feel like with the sort of comeback win or the overcoming that, you know, in lack of offense, to see that early in the season bodes really well, because I feel like sometimes that can be something that develops later. You know, mm-hmm. that first weekend, everybody's kind of getting the rust off, everybody's kind of adjusting, figuring out what you have. To be able to show that level of fight this early says a lot and bodes well for them if they can keep it up for the rest of the year.
Yeah, you want to see how it, I think every coach wants to see how a team responds to adversity. And a lot of times it is literally how can you bounce back from a loss that you shouldn't have had. And the fact that they faced adversity and overcame it and they still won, I think bodes well for them.
Yeah. I think, you know, you mentioned Louisiana Tech is probably the biggest opponent of this next weekend. Is there anything else, you know, about the upcoming series on the road that you think that you'll be watching for, whether it's in the opponents or for Arkansas?
Yeah, well, I think I got two things. Number one, Hunter Cornelius in the SID. He came from Louisiana Tech.
Oh, I forgot, of course.
I'm excited to hear how it is for him to go back there. That's not team related, but he's been very helpful if he's listening
Hunter's
to this.
Hunter's great.
And then they actually, what I want to see is the opening weekend, I saw them be more aggressive on the bases than mm-hmm. I have before. Like, they were trying to steal all the time. All the time comparatively to how they have been in the past. And I say, I don't even know how their numbers stack up against SEC teams, but I was like, whoa, we're putting some pressure on teams this year. We aren't going in the old, same old, just kind of playing it out and not risking stuff. I was like, Courtney's going, and really, I think there was probably an emphasis, kind of like with baseball, what we've talked about a lot, with they're trying to create some havoc.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not doing the same old, same old. So I'm curious to see if that's just something that they had this past weekend, or if it's
a season-long kind of strategy.
Yeah, if it's a trend, I don't know. It's something I noticed for sure.
Yeah. What did you see pitching-wise? Because, you know, they played all these games. Okay, because we had talked a little bit about how it seemed like they had more variety, it seems, in their arms. Kind of similar to what we've said about the baseball team.
Yeah, they're good. Whenever you end up a weekend and no team scored more than one run against you in five games, I think that says a lot. I think their ERA is second in the SEC to LSU right now, and the freshman pitchers are really good. Literally, I think the only trouble that they ran into all weekend, it would be due to a walk or something mm-hmm. that then, and I know the first game, the only run that Texas State scored was an error that came off of, I think, there was a walk in the mix. It's like it was their own mistakes that led to runs. It was hardly hits, which is pretty impressive for a first weekend. So they're good. Peyton Burnham, the freshman from Oregon, impressed me a lot. Cam Harrison was good. Robin Heron. I mean, they all did good. So it's just, I'm curious to see if that continues.
Yeah. Real quick before we go to our next break, just women's basketball loses a really close game. You covered it. I was at a Super Bowl party and I hadn't even seen what had happened.
Yeah.
I hadn't really been on my phone a lot yesterday. And somebody at the party leaned over to me and was like, I saw they lost really close. And I was like, I saw that Arkansas lost to Georgia. And I was like, what sport? I couldn't remember. I was so out of it all day yesterday that I just wasn't even thinking. But so, you know, really close loss. What happened, basically?
Yeah. Well, these were two teams fighting at the bottom of the SEC to try and, to be blunt, they're trying to not finish last. Nobody wants to finish last. And Arkansas took an early lead, 10-2 off the bat. You're like, okay, they came to play. And then it just kind of tailed off in the second half. Georgia builds a 9-point lead late in the second quarter, early third quarter. Arkansas showed some fight. Izzy Higginbottom, who we've talked about, she's their star. She hits a game-tying 3-pointer with 50-something seconds left. And then Georgia takes the lead again, and then she makes a layup with 8 seconds left to tie it again. So you're like, okay. And then she had a hard game. She was not making shots that she normally makes. So it showed me a lot that, she somehow made them when it mattered. But then Georgia gets the ball, 8 seconds left, driving to the rim. The girl who drove to the rim almost did the splits and walked, but she somehow kept her balance, got back up, and then got fouled on her way in. Gets two free throws with 1.3 seconds. She makes the first, does the smart thing, clanks the second as hard as she can to where nobody can get the rebound and even call a timeout. So, because in the women's game, you can call a timeout and advance the ball into the front court because you have a timeout. You can't do that in the men's. So with 1.5 seconds left to miss that free throw, to have that awareness to know this is going to make it to where they don't even have a chance to win the game. Really smart. So Arkansas loses. They're 2-9, which means I'm doing math on the spot. 5 games left in the regular season. They need to win. They're going to need to win one to make sure they don't finish last. And they have Missouri coming up at some point.
I was going
to
say, what's their best shot? It's probably Missouri.
It's Missouri. They're tied with Missouri and Georgia for last place. But now Georgia's got that tiebreaker. But it's going to come down to, can Arkansas beat Missouri, which is just kind of funny to me because Arkansas is on like a 11 or 12 game winning streak in the series against them. And it'd be like, I'm like, of course, the 1 year that Missouri would break it would be to make Arkansas finish last or something. Maybe not. We'll see.
The latest in the battle line rivalry saga. Yes.
Always. We're big battle line rivalry.
Of course.
Watchers.
Of course. Yeah. So. When we come back, we will talk a little bit of miscellaneous sports news. We've got some gymnastics talk, a little bit of looking ahead to baseball, and maybe some Super Bowl discussion. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We were just doing a little bit of Super Bowl halftime discussion during the break. We both liked it, the Kendrick Lamar halftime show. You know, to me, I was saying to Ethan during the break, I've never watched a Super Bowl halftime show and been like, that was horrible. I never have like strong feelings about them either way. I don't listen to Kendrick Lamar in my like everyday life. I'm familiar with all of his popular songs. I understand that he's, you know, considered probably the best active rapper right now, mostly lyrically. So it's interesting that he was the halftime performer. I thought it was a cool performance. I love Samuel L. Jackson. That was awesome. I like SZA a lot, so it's cool to see her. So I like the halftime. I understand, you know, it's not for everybody. I get it, whatever, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he was in my opinion, it was more of like a strange pick for the Super Bowl. I'm like, if people understood, like people who just weren't familiar with him, like,
he does not produce stadium bangers. That's just not what his style is. That's not his music.
For this being Kendrick Lamar, it was great for, like, that was what I would expect from Kendrick Lamar. And it was aesthetically pleasing to me with everything that they did.
It looked cool.
It looked cool. But, like, he's more of a lyricist than, like, anything else. So I'm kind of like, yeah, it wasn't your, who are some that have gone in recent years?
Rihanna stands out.
Lady Gaga.
Yes. Katy Perry on the big lion and then Left
Bruno
Shark.
Mars that 1 year. Yes. It's like in Coldplay, I think, even. Like, he's not one of those. It was a strange pick, in my opinion. And I get it if people that aren't familiar, like, with his music are like, what the heck are we doing? But
because it's not the usual kind of thing you would do for a Super Bowl. You know, you usually have somebody that, like, they have really popular songs that everybody can sing along to. You know, they'll have a big flashy performance, and that's just not necessarily what he does. Yeah. But I thought that it worked for, I don't know.
And it's like his songs are so, like, he doesn't write songs that don't have, like, a meaning.
Right.
And, like, his number one song that just won a Grammy, like, it's a whole diss track. And the fact that, like, it was epic that he just dissed Drake on national TV. Like that.
That song is really catchy, too.
It is.
It's, like, it's fun to listen to. I like it.
Yeah, so I liked it. I get it. If people that aren't familiar were like, what the heck, this is
horrible. It's, not everybody likes rap, that's fine. Yeah. You know, I don't love country. Like, if it was a country singer, I probably wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. But it's not, it's just not for me. Like, it's not my taste, which is fine. And I don't listen to a lot of rap anyway, but it's just, it's cool. Yeah.
And I think the funniest part about it is always Super Bowl halftimes get a lot of talk. Like, they always do. Like, honestly, I think I remember better who has performed halftime of Super Bowls than I do who's won the Super Bowls over the past,
too,
like,
sure.
decade. Like,
for
I could name more of those than Super Bowl champs.
I can't tell you what year it was, but I could name you some performers for sure.
But, like, especially yesterday, just the way that game was so boring. Yeah. It was like halftime was all you had to hold on to. It was like, this isn't going to... I was like, we'll give it one possession in the third quarter to see if this game gets better. And once it didn't, you look up and it's 5 minutes left in the third quarter. I was like, oh, this one's the writing's on the wall. So halftime was all that we really had.
Right. I was thinking of you because we all kept talking about, all right, it's not over because 28-3 happened. And I was thinking of you, my local Falcons fan.
I had a lot of Chiefs fans that I was watching the game with. And I kept on telling them, I was like, y'all, I promise, as someone who was ahead 28-3, don't get comfortable. And I told him, I said, that was Brady's like serious you are the GOAT moment. I said, y'all think y'all have the GOAT in Mahomes. Can he? No. There was
they
nothing.
Made him look silly.
Yeah, well, and the defensive line just terrorized that O-line. Like, I mean, Mahomes had no time to do anything. And whenever he did, he was making bad decisions. I mean, that was nightmare scenario for the Chiefs, just the way that game went. But you know, Falcons did beat the Eagles this year, so we are the de facto Super Bowl champs.
I saw the Eagles play in New Orleans. We went to the Saints game. My boyfriend's a Saints fan. We were there for a wedding, and we got to see the game. So I saw the Eagles at the venue that they were going to win the Super Bowl, and they did lose, I think. Did they lose the Saints? They lost the Saints. I was at the game.
The Eagles lost to the Saints?
Did they? No.
I would be surprised.
I don't think they did.
I'm about to say, because the Saints hit a very rough...
Wow, I feel insane.
No, you're good. You're good. All I'm going to say is I think the Falcons were like one of three losses or something for this team. So
they won. It was 15-12. They won.
15-12. It was close.
Won. Yeah.
And it was in the same stadium that they went on to win.
I was thinking about it because it was the Saints vibes were very high because they had won a couple games before that, and it was looking like their offense was good, and it was like big surprise. And then they lost the Eagles, and that kind of started the downward spiral that just kind of continued. But now they're going to get Kellen Moore, and Corey's very excited about it.
Yeah, well, the Falcons, all I know is that was about the most fluky win that the Falcons have ever gotten, because Saquon Barkley, the Eagles did the thing where instead of trying, like, with under 2 minutes to give the Falcons, they didn't want the Falcons to get the ball back, and so they went for it on fourth down just to try and seal it, be able to take a knee, and Saquon Barkley dropped a pass. Like, it was just a flat-out drop, and then the Falcons went in 2 minute drill and won. It was awesome, and it was the highlight of the season. So, as a Falcons fan, I always have the moral victories and the three quarters of a Super Bowl. Like, we are 3/4 Super Bowl champs. Like,
there you go.
It was awesome when we were up 28-3.
Did you have strong Chiefs-Eagles feelings? Like, did you care who won?
No, I'm kind of sick of the Chiefs. Were always a team that growing up, like, I kind of admired them in a weird way. Like, I liked their stadium, Arrowhead. It's close. Their fans are super loyal. I was like, but within the past 2 or 3 years, they've turned evil to me. Like, it just happens.
Everybody gets sick of a winner. Yeah. Everybody gets sick of a repeat champion. Yeah. It just is what happens. You start to hate them. We've seen, you know, it happens with teams, even like the Chiefs that started out really lovable. You know, they were new, they were exciting. They had been an underdog. It was fun. Everybody loved Andy Reid. Everybody loved Patrick Mahomes and their personalities. And then now all the things you used to love about them are annoying because you're tired of hearing about them. It would happen to any team that was in their position.
They caught a second wind whenever they got Taylor Swift on board.
Well, that quickly turns out. Because everyone decided that was bad. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, when the more you hear about something, the more sick you get of it. But.
Oh, for sure. And I honestly, I kind of wanted to see the Eagles win, too, because my brother is a Cowboys fan, and I have a lot of Cowboys fans in my life that are sometimes insufferable. Like, and I was like, I just want your division rival to win a Super Bowl while y'all sit and talk about the one that you won eons ago.
Well, Matt texted us last night and he said, I've been a Cowboys fan for what, like 30 years or whatever, and he said, and I want the Eagles to win this Super Bowl. So some Cowboys fans, I think the disdain for the Chiefs outweighed the Eagles thing.
Matt is also a very strong refs on the Chiefs side guy. True. I mean, like, true. I think that Matt has gotten to a point where he's so sick of the Chiefs and the refs conspiracy stuff that he was like, this needs to end. Yeah. We hate the dynasty. I don't know. I'm speaking for our beloved host without him here right now. But that's my theory. So,
yeah, I was watching with my parents and a bunch of their friends, and it was pretty much a Chiefs watch party. There were a couple people that wanted the Eagles to win, but it was basically, my parents are Chiefs fans. They lived near Kansas City, you know, 30 minutes from Kansas City for a couple years, and all their friends were Chiefs fans there, and it was while the Chiefs were getting good, so they kind of adopted that. So, you know, we basically had a Chiefs Super Bowl party, and it was fun. And, you know, the vibes were surprisingly high for a room full of mostly Chiefs fans, but I mean, yeah, it's the Super Bowl is always fun. I didn't get to see a ton of the commercials because we were at a party and it was a lot of people couldn't hear them super well. I saw the one where Seal was a seal, which I thought was hilarious. Did you see that one?
I didn't see like any of these. The only one I saw was I randomly happened to look up on Nerds Gummy Cluster was singing.
Oh, yes.
That's like the one commercial I can tell you about right now.
Yeah, that one happened. The seal as a seal one. So I don't remember what it was an ad for, but it was it was Seal, and it was probably like AI generated, and they had Seal singing, and he was like on a seal's body. It was very frightening, but it was funny. I thought it was hilarious.
This is where I'm glad that I'm out of college, because I was an advertising concentration major in the day after the Super Bowl was like full-fledged discussion of these ads, and I was like, I would feel like I had to be so in tune with the ads.
The Super Bowl was homework.
Yeah, now I am eating nachos during commercial breaks. So,
I didn't see a ton of them. I got to go through today, and you know, they'll always do. Places will put up lists of like, here are the best and worst Super Bowl commercials, and I gotta look at those. It felt like a lot of companies put theirs out before the Super Bowl, so there were several that I saw that I was like, oh, I've seen this ad already, like the Dunkin' one with Jeremy Strong. I was like, this has been airing for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, and I guess I get targeted with Gummy Cluster ads because I had certainly seen that on YouTube before. Like, this stuff is getting out of hand, that where like your devices know what you like, what you don't like, because I have gotten targeted with Gummy Cluster ads, and I have a jar of Nerds Gummy Clusters in my apartment that stays stocked, and I'm like, somehow my phone and my computer know.
Yeah. Well, now that we've been talking about it, I'm sure I'll start getting them too. My phone, it's in my pocket right now. It's hearing me talk about gummy clusters. And I like them fine. I never buy them. But
I like them, but I'm not like obsessed. It's just what I have.
You could give me a lot of guesses for things you get targeted ads for. And I feel like candy, like some kind of candy, I feel like I would get that. That feels right.
All I know is devices know exactly what I like now, and I get definitely targeted all the time. But I hate to say it to them, I don't online shop ever, so they never catch me. But
I can't imagine ordering gummy clusters online.
Yeah, imagine just bulk buying from Amazon.
Pretty crazy. My gosh. Well, I want to talk about a few more Arkansas things before we go. I mean, the gymnastics team beats Florida, number two Florida. Second time they've beaten a number two team at Bud Walton this season after, you know, in a couple weeks. I was covering it, and it was really fun. You know, it was a smaller crowd than when they had LSU. I think it was about 7,000 something, and they had close to 10,000 at the LSU meet. But it was a good crowd, and it was a fun meet. I was a little concerned going in because Leah Smith, one of their, you know, most consistent performers on vault and on floor, was out. She was in a boot, and they Jordan Weaver expects her back before the end of the season. She said she's got some like Achilles pain, and they're just kind of resting her for a while, and so she was out, and they had to replace her, but the people that replaced her did really well. I mean, they had a freshman perform really well on vault, and then, you know, on floor is always their best event. They're pretty deep on floor, and they did a really good job. Maddie Walagora made her floor debut and had a really, really great performance. And so, you know, that they got a lot better on vault and on bars, which were the two of the things that had kind of been tougher for them. Beam has been probably their hardest event. It's always tough, but their lowest scores for the most part have come on beam. And beam, it was a little tough again, and they had a fall, and then they had just kind of a straight up just a low score. I mean, she stayed on, but it was like a 9.6 something, and it was just not a great score. So they had to count that low score because of the fall. And so it was looking like, okay, you know, it was still pretty close with Florida going into that final rotation, and then Florida gets on beam for the final rotation, and they have two falls and a low score, a 9.6 something. And so they had to count a fall and a low score, and that was kind of what opened the door for Arkansas to get the win. And it's interesting, you know, I was telling my people about this at the Super Bowl party, and they're like, so what's Arkansas going to be ranked now? And it's like, well, it depends on their average score. It doesn't actually matter that they beat, you know, that's what's so weird about gymnastics. Yeah. Is, you know, I kind of like it, though, because it is, there's a very clear, you know, it's not a poll, it's not opinion, it's literally what is your score. Now, the scores are subjective, it's being judged, but, you know, it's interesting to see how the rankings shake out. They're still at number 15 after week six. Florida went down to number three, LSU's back at two now after their average score went down a little bit. But, you know, so it was a fun meet. I was surprised that they got the win just because they had a tough meet at Oklahoma the week before, a 195 and change, and so it was a surprise, I think, but it was impressive that they were able to come back the way they did, especially with an injury to somebody as important as Leah Smith. So, I mean, a really good thing for them to take away for you know, the next few weeks of the season. You know, we're starting to get down to that sort of crunch time for them. And so they're on the road. They've got to have some better road performances these next couple weeks, and then they'll be back at home at the end of the month.
Yeah. Whenever I watch any of these gymnastics meets, like, these announcers could say anything and I would believe them, because I don't, like, I watch and I can't see, like, how they see these things in, like, live, in person. They're, like, noticing things that could be deductions, whatnot. Anyway, so I take whatever they say as gold. And I was kind of keeping up with the meet, and I was watching it, and it got to, they were going to the final rotation, and they were down by, I don't even remember what
the margin was. I can't remember exactly, yeah.
But it was sizable enough that these announcers go, oh, and Florida is excellent on beam. Like,
yeah, well, they have been, yeah
they were like, Arkansas is outstanding on floor, but Florida on beam, like, they just got to do what they do. And I let go
of
the
rope. And then they didn't.
I would say I let go of the rope. I stopped watching. I said, that's all I got to hear. I said, these announcers just told me it's going to be over. I'll check the highlights. And then Christina texts us, and she's like, well, going to write about another upsetting number two story, because second in 3 weeks or whatever. Yeah. And so I checked the score, and sure enough, we had some falls that I missed. So. Yeah,
the Bud Walton beam, man. It's cursed, I think.
The Bud Walton beam. You need to make a Twitter account or something.
Yeah, just make it a thing.
Every time that somebody falls, just all caps, fall.
Anyway, it's been interesting to watch. But
yeah, I let go of the rope, decided I wasn't going to watch the end of it, and they won. So maybe I just don't need to tune in again. So we'll see. No, for real. It's exciting when they're at home. They perform so well at home. And the way that they finish there on their strongest event and gets the crowd all into it.
And the finish on Frankie Price's floor routine, that's so fun. She's so much fun to watch. It always is great. You know, everybody stays in their seats for that.
All I ask is she gets a 10 at home before the end of her career.
We'll see. 10s have been, I wrote about it last week, 10s have been hard to come by. The scoring this year is something to watch.
And I feel like if Arkansas is gonna get one, it might be her on floor. We'll see.
Her or Jocelyn seem like the best candidate. Jocelyn on beam or on floor. She's done so well. So yeah, I mean, they've been fun to watch. They've got quite a few weeks left, and you know, there will be more for them to do, and I'll be curious, you know, how they continue to progress. Especially they have some injury issues, so you know, we'll see what happens for them there. But I know we're all really excited about baseball over here. We've got it, you know, four games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Wow, it's the week.
It's this week.
It's this week. We're here.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. You and I will be doing some track this weekend so that Matt can be over at baseball. But yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for it to get going. I haven't seen how it's going to be weather-wise yet. I don't know how cold it's going to be, but I think it'll be really fun. You know, it's always the start of baseball season. There's always, you know, something in the air around here.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
And especially whenever you look at the schedule, and they got promos every single day of the first week. We got 2025 schedule magnet for the first game, baseball beanie the next day, bark in the park the next day.
They have bark in the park this early. Oh, shoot.
On Sunday, it's bark in the park.
We might have to bring the dog.
Kids running the bases on Monday. So, yeah, they've got, I mean, it's here. We're officially in baseball mode where, you know, you just get to, I don't know. It's like, I love how each weekend in baseball season just ends up taking its own unique form. And like, I don't know. I remember things. For some reason, baseball and softball are one of the sports that's like the easiest for me to remember how things went. I don't know why. Like, but I just look back, I'm like, oh, that was the weekend. Like, Florida 2 years ago was whenever softball had bark in the park. Like, I don't know why, but like, I have strong association with these like promos.
Well, you told me that Arkansas softball has like a bark in the park.
They are so good on bark in the park days. I don't know how baseball is. I've heard that baseball, it just gets canceled all the time.
The weather's always bad. They do it a lot of times midweek games, so they usually end up winning because it's a lesser opponent typically, and the weather's not always great.
Softball's like upsetting teams on bark in the park day, and like not just like barely beating them, they're like blowing them out. Usually it's insane. It makes no sense, but like I think I've covered 2-run rule wins on bark in the park day for softball.
We might have to bring our dog out. So softball's bark in the park, because baseball, yeah, I can't bring my dog to the press box, unfortunately. But
yeah, I think that would probably violate some sort of press box policy.
We brought him to one last year. We just went out to the hog pen. I decided not to work, and us and Anthony brought his dog, and Corey got on SEC Network holding our dog like a baby, and he put it in his highlight video that he made from that game. He put him holding the dog,
awesome.
So it was fun. But
this early has got to be the bark in the park, like,
yeah,
earliest one.
It's probably gonna be really cold.
I'm about to say, these dogs, if you have the little like shirts or whatever you put
our
on
dog
in the
has
sweaters,
a little sweater.
Put them on. They might need them. I actually haven't checked the weather at all. So maybe it's
gonna
be,
I think it's
going
to be cold. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I know that we're supposed to get some cold weather this week in Northwest Arkansas, but hopefully it gets out of the way before these games start, because we all know baseball, softball, it's best played when it's a little bit warmer. It's a vibe. Let's see. I'm pulling up the weather right now. On Sunday, whenever it's supposed to be Bark in the Park, okay, high of 32, low of 20.
Gorgeous.
So, bring your dog sweaters. They get it, or the little paw mittens, like they need them. It's going to be cold.
That's so funny. So. Well, between talking about baseball and talking about the weather, I feel like we've really done Matt proud here in his absence.
Yeah, no, for real. Matt is a big time like weather nerd. I mean, there was the day that I'm going off on a tangent now. There was a day before a women's basketball game that Matt was like, "Oh, this is bad right now." Outside, we step outside from this show, and he's like, "It's the cloud coverage or something after it rained." He was predicting, he was like, "This is recipe for a tornado." Lo and behold, that night I am sitting in the women's basketball media area, and we're in a tornado warning. Like, nobody's coming to this game. And they are showing on the TV, we have the news up, and there's a tornado dropping down in Rogers. Like, beyond, I can see my apartment in the shot, but it's the tornado's far beyond it. And I'm like, Matt called this at 10 a.m. this morning. It was a vibes thing for him.
Yep. If he weren't doing this, I think he'd be a weatherman.
Oh, I do too. I think Matt's secondary calling is meteorologist for sure.
Well, so. We appreciate you joining us. Matt will be back when he's feeling better later this week. But we're excited to keep discussing basketball, baseball, softball, everything that's going on during this crossover season as the week goes on. But thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.